Didn't know what. I don't think they're gonna.
140. Also, we have one form. I appreciate the transition out of the working group, the working group on hate speech and harassment prior to this meeting. First on our order of business today is approval of minutes. First up is November 15th, 2017. There is a typo on this one that I want to bring to the attention. On the top of page two, under B.3, it appears to be a dangling question. And just noting that I don't know what was said, there's a little opposition to ask that be stricken. Hearing none, that will be stricken. Are there any other comments or questions on the November? The November 15 minutes, actually, I'd also ask that the footer be changed from number one to number 15. But any other comments or questions of those minutes? Hearing none, there's no speaker list. Is there any dissent approving the November 15th minutes? Hearing none, the minutes are so approved. Next is the February 21st minute meeting minutes. Are there any comments or questions on those minutes? I do actually have one added. There are none others. At our last meeting, we noted that the executive session, I just wanted to add to the minutes, that the committee exited executive session at 5:46 p.m. There was a motion to extend the meeting to 5:50 p.m. The motion carried by about 5-0-1. The motion carried unanimous consent. There was a motion to approve the recommendation of UA Resolution 11. That motion carried by about 5-0-1, and the meeting was formally adjourned at 5:47 p.m. However, I wrote that last week, we made it in. And since we exited, we said until our clerk, she had to stick around while we were in executive session, but I wanted her to the minutes reflected our actions afterwards. Is there any objection to adding that to the minutes?
I was not.
You were not present?
Present. Oh, okay. Wait.
It says you, I believe.
Oh, that. Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Sorry. Yes. So hearing no objections, that is added to the minutes. Are there any other comments or questions on the minutes of the 21st? Hearing none, there's a speaker list. Is there any dissent approving them? Hearing none, the minutes are so approved. Next, moving on to February 28th. Are there any comments or questions regarding those minutes? Hearing none, is there any dissent approving the minutes as presented? Hearing none, the minutes are so approved. Next on our agenda is the working group of day special labor groups are to step out for a moment, which will lead us to move on to our next item, which will be brief. For those who aren't aware, the University Hearing Interview Board staffing is getting underway. I had met with the Office Assembly last fall to schedule it. I must admit some slight confusion. I thought we had scheduled started considerably earlier in February. There's been some confusion over that. However, the new time appears to be starting next Monday. I've been in contact with the office to ensure that the qualifications are up and running. The questions were discussed last fall, and we are in process for that. The goal, I think the way it was written, presented to me, was it'll be open for 2.5 weeks. It'll be shared widely, which means we will then have access to the applications to you at our lead, at our pleasure. Because the timeline is more compressed than I truly do believe there was miscommunication, because I remember asking for at least 4 weeks to review, and even two. Gina may have miswritten or misscheduled things. Regardless, once I come in, I will schedule separate meetings for those because they're going to be going through the deep dive of the applications. We generally rank on a scale of 1 to 5. You may push them from 1 to 10, just to allow more granularity. And I will ascertain the list of individuals who need to be seated. We will then fill the seats. And we have discussed in the past, if we come down to a number of individuals we can't decide, we have the ability to ask for an interview or some other way to solicit additional information if we're really trying to come down to those decisions. The Qualtrics survey link, I can circulate right now. It's still a little bare bones, but it appears to be relatively underway. I want to make sure everyone is aware of that. We are also in the process of working myself, actually, Mr. Coffin. The fall had begun to draft a general idea of what procedures the committee wishes to operate under moving forward for the hearing boards. So this year, every year, it's an estimate ad hoc scheduling to us and say, by the first week of X month, we will do this, et cetera, just moving along. But that was a lot of me talking. Are there any comments or questions on the UHRB staffing?
Did you have something?
Either way.
You go first.
Okay. My question is basically when it comes down to reviewing the application, you're talking about scheduling other meetings. Is there any way we can just kind of review this on our own and then just have a meeting to sort of summarize our thoughts all together? Do we need to go through every single application together?
We do not. What we've done in the past is we will, in essence, do a double review, so in essence, try and allow for the double blind. Generally, undergrads do undergrads, grads do grads, employees, employees, et cetera.
Okay.
That being said, obviously, because we generally have a certainly large number of undergrads, that works only to a point. Okay. We can do that. In essence, what we'll do is we can sit down and say we have X applicants, we can split them up and then say you can review them at your leisure. I would recommend you can meet with whoever your essence, your quote unquote partner is on that. Mm-hmm. And then we can reconvene for a brief meeting to go through the ranking to come down, like get down to brass tacks. But there's no reason we need to. Traditionally, we do an essential schedule room and I'll say whoever wants to come can come. Just okay. Otherwise, it'll just things that you put the back burner because there's only like busy one is. But no, we are absolutely, we don't need to do it.
Okay. Just wanted clarification.
Of course.
Thanks.
So yeah, I just wanted to say, what is the exact date and time that the applications are going to go live?
March 12th is Monday, and I believe, I want to say in the morning, I can grab
that time. Can you say at like 10 a.m.?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm in contact with the office. I will actually speak to you because the timelines you provided, I do not, personally, does not align with what I recall discussing, but...
Right.
And my notes in the meeting also say we should have started earlier, but...
And then what is the time we're going to stop collecting them?
It would be 2.5 weeks, so it would be Wednesday 2 weeks later. I don't know the exact date. I can forward the group the plan that was provided to me.
28. I just wanted to see if the committee wanted to, like, formally endorse the plan, because sometimes the office can benefit from having that sort of structure. Recommended to them.
I can circulate it briefly right now if the committee would prefer. Right, in essence, it is roughly what Gabe had provided. Our goal is to standardize this moving forward because, again, if I'm with myself in the office, this kind of stuff is done every year. There's no reason we can't have it. This will be done in February, et cetera, to streamline the process. Richard.
So if we were to do what Gabe said, the applications go out March 12th, and
it looks like it would close on the 28th.
It closes on the 28th, and then we decide by when?
We would decide, the plan that had been provided, said we would make our decision by May 4th. That, again, is much later than we discussed. The goal would be to discuss, give it to the UH sooner rather than later. There's also the matter of discussing how we want to handle renewals, but that is a different. That I'll talk about that after. I will, if you don't mind, I'll pull the plan that's provided to me, so I can be absolutely certain I tell you all. What I can do is we can come back to this and allow Reese to provide her update on the working group, which was not secure in silence. Is there any sense of doing that? So Reese, if you want to provide an update on the working group's actions, I mean, we just met, so.
So I think Matt sent the agenda of the working group meeting.
Yes.
So we basically made our way through the agenda, and a lot of our discussion was about the first forum. We ran the two sessions coming up on March 9th and 14th, and the structure of those forums, or those sessions for that first forum, we're calling it an information gathering forum, trying to get, you know, a lot of input from the community, and decided on the structure of having a large group, however many people come, to begin with in one sort of full session and have breakout groups where people can talk with each other and more kind of, for some people it's a less intimidating structure, and then come back in a larger group as well. And our purpose as a working group in what we'd like to come out of from the first forum, those two sessions, moving on toward the second forum, is that we will be taking notes and bringing our notes together as a group, looking for themes that we see emerging, seeing if there are commonalities of concerns and thoughts that people have. And out of that kind of in foundational work that we're doing, come up with ideas for our next set of forums, the second forum with the two sessions being, as we're calling it, a workshopping kind of forum. So it won't be fully formed proposals at that point, but ideas to put out to the community based on our work as a working group and the community input to have people respond to, think about. And then other people, other groups will certainly bring in their own proposals so that we start to move towards the third set of forums, which is to really have input on very specific proposals that the working group creates. Now, that may be as little as things are good, you know, leave it alone, we can't make it better, to, you know, much more structural kinds of ideas, but most likely someplace in between in terms of whether there are changes needed to the code, clarifications, perhaps interpretive kinds of provisions to add to the code. So, I don't know, other people were there, so if anybody wants to add anything about what we accomplished.
There will also be minutes that we'll be typing up if anybody has questions, but are there any questions for Risa about the activities of work? Hearing none?
Please come, if you can, and do distribute, sorry to interrupt you, but you know, you got the announcement, please feel free, encourage you, we got right there, distribute widely, do send the announcements around to people if they might be interested in groups. Thank you.
Yeah. Can you please repeat the time and place of the first one? It's tomorrow, Friday, or?
Friday the 9th from 3 to 5 in 142 Goldman Smith. And the second one is Wednesday, March 14th, 12 to 2. And we're waiting to get the room actually given to us. But that's the first forum is in two sessions to make it as widely possible as we can to have people from all parts of the community. And if you take a look at the announcement that went out, we have these five questions about this. These are the kinds of things we're interested in hearing from the community. So I'm really trying to turn it into a true information sharing kind of session rather than just Q's and A's.
Any other questions? Hearing none, we'll move back into the UHRD. Actually, if I wasn't able to pull up the calendar provided to me by the office, the version that was provided to me said that applications will open tomorrow, Monday, March 12th. No time is provided, but we could say end of business, 12 noon. I mean, we could certainly catch
on. 10 a.m. I think that would benefit.
Okay, that would benefit them. And then they're meant to close the 28th of March, and they're meant to be sent to us the 30th of March, on the Friday before spring break. And then we would have, in essence, 2 weeks to review it, to present them at the panel UA meeting, pass it at the final UA meeting. This is what was provided to me. As I said before, I have a really strong inkling that this is not necessarily what I had discussed right previously, but there is a point where we must move forward, and I think that's what it is now. And I want to ensure the group is aware of that. Yeah.
So other than the final date that you won't have all the applications approved or rejected by, what else does not match your intended calendar?
Discussing this, and I have to check my notes, but I moved my notes to record this. We were hoping to open an application back in February and have the whole process earlier. Questions were approved last semester, so the idea was to back it up. I know the offices and office assemblies are now looking at essay elections, the grad professional student trustee election is coming up. In essence, their calendar is going to become infinitely busier, and the idea was put it ahead and do it early, also giving us time instead of just 2 weeks of a mad dash. I followed up the office in the middle of February asking what was going on. They said this, there was some back and forth. Unfortunately, we are now what we are now. But that's why I mentioned we have discussed in the past just standardizing this once and for all, writing a new standing rule, a UA bylaw somewhere to say, here's what the committee has decided we're going to follow. And just to avoid this ambiguity of we agreed on something. I'm not 100% certain, but this really, I saw it, and it seems like later, I'm almost sure it's later than we discussed.
My question is they're closing the Wednesday before spring break.
Correct.
And I don't understand why. At that point, you would even have them close before spring break, or why not the Friday? Because we're not going to be reviewing in those, at least not together, in those 2.5 days before we all leave for state campus. So I don't see why it can't hurt to leave them open throughout the entirety of spring break, or close them like the Friday before spring break, give more people time. Because I know if anybody has an application due date, then at least from my perspective as an engineer, we're going to have a lot of work and problem sets to try and get in before we all leave. That's not a great time to have an application due.
So, you know, I think on that point, you know, one of the things that would have always have been great that for some reason I never could convince the office to let us see is just like when the applications come in, they just like automatically get forwarded to like Matt. I think that would be great. And if we had that, then we would know when people are submitting their applications. And we would know, and I think what we would probably find out is that everyone submits their applications like the night before they're due. So I think that, you know, the question of when should we set the due date should be what day, for what day is it the case that for the preceding couple of days we can do the most outreach? And I think setting it like directly after spring break would make it a little more challenging because no one's on campus, your undergrads are on campus. So would we want to do it still before spring break then?
I mean, I think before spring break is fine, but the Wednesday makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Because unless we're going to be using that Thursday and Friday to work together to review the applications, I think they should just be due, you know, maybe Friday at midnight. I don't know if the office can handle closing the applications then.
I mean, it's altered, so it should be, I'm better to say it's automatable.
Now, as a student, like my perspective would be if I really wanted to apply to the UHRB, I'd finish all my schoolwork during the week. And then maybe even do the application wherever I was going that Friday evening. But Wednesday would just be an awful time.
Better make it 11:59.
Right.
Do you want to do like 11:59
that
Friday?
And then we as CJC could still use that whole week or the week before.
Exactly.
Promote that.
Okay, listen, I know we generally will share it out the office in a very rigorous communication plan. I mean, that means that even the time that was provided to me, the time that was provided said that I would have the final version of the Qualtrics prepared and sent to me by this past Monday. I looked at it yesterday and it's about just under half done. So it's the plan that was provided. I really don't believe it accords with what I was told. And even the dates that are on that plan are not necessarily being followed, which is concerning, which is why I think the best solution is just to, after we're done with all this, I have some draft language in terms of what we do, put it somewhere where it's permanent and everyone knows. On X days, we do X, and there's no more of the back and forth of scheduling it every semester because we do it every year.
Okay. So we want to open them March 12th at 10 a.m. and close them March 30th, which is a Friday, at 11:59 p.m. Is that like the date? With the dates?
That, March 12th at 10 a.m.
Yeah. Do people feel comfortable doing that, or like are there strong objections to that? Well, then, with that, I'm going to make a motion to adopt that as the calendar so that it's reflected in the minutes
okay.
So that the office can do it.
There's a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the calendar, please raise your hand. Blacker? All who are opposed? All in abstain? Chair abstains. Vote 7-0-1. That is approved. The last bit of item on that is the way that was communicated to the office assemblies said they're going to wait. Their intent was to contact hearing board members whose terms are expiring to ask them to reapply completely through the standard process. Historically, we have not done that. And as that is a decision that I believe is best suited to this committee, I was concerned the office in essence adopted that as their posture and wanted to ensure you were aware. What we could do if we'd like is to have them A, signal to us some way acceptance. We have to re-nominate people and the CDU has to confirm people. The CDC will can resolicit the faculty has a role in that as well. But at the end of the day, we could ask that there be a checkbox saying, are you a currently serving member so they can be flagged off so long as they're not a glaring error, they will be rewarded. We have options for how we do this. It seemed odd to me to say, you must reapply through the entire application, which takes about a half hour to an hour to fill out, and we'll get thrown in with everyone else. Seems to be odd because it might seem to be really continuity on the board's experience, and if you've been serving for the past however many years, assuming there's not an issue. We generally have been happy to reappoint, and therefore that decision seemed unilaterally made by the office seems that I think the committee should be involved in. I have Michelle and I have Richard on the speaker's list. Michelle.
I would just say that whatever decision that the committee comes with to have that sent out by the administrative chair of the so that way it doesn't seem as if CJC is quite a lot there. So that's just a resource that we have to use.
I agree that I know the office assembly says that they would send it out, but I agree that administrative chair is better because it's an internal, it's a renewal amount. So I completely agree with that. Thanks.
So how for those who might be reappointed, how do we know whether there is an issue?
So I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Well, you said if there's not an issue with them, we would automatically reappoint.
Oh, yes. Well,
so yes. How do we know?
What we would do is we would circulate a list of renewals historically to the JA and the JCCs and say, is there anything in a fall that you would think would need to be an issue? To my knowledge, I don't believe we have ever heard. Actually, we heard two about attendance a couple of years ago, but there's never really been a substantive complaint. And generally, assuming you have to move to affirmatively seek one reappoint, you'll be sent an email saying, hi, your term's expiring. Do you wish to reappoint? Yes, no. We'll get all the yeses in, and then we will determine if you, and we'll check it. That's what we've done. I completely agree we need to formalize it. We discussed, actually, Michelle and Gabe and I discussed in the last year a way to do that. Fits into the language that we had drafted in the fall, which I actually looked at yesterday. So we can definitely, I think formalize is good. That being said, it seems interesting to make them go through the entire application process all over again without even a flag that they are currently serving a member. But Victoria.
I mean, if they already submitted an application once, it was already reviewed presumably by this committee once, it was already appointed by, it was already confirmed by the UA once, yes. Why do we need to go through the entire process again? I don't think we should have to do that. I don't think the people who are already serving will want to do that. I think it's going to, we're going to lose our institutional knowledge. People don't want to fill out a half hour application, and I think that's ridiculous. Okay.
So the committee, if you'd like, the committee could motion to have the administrative chair, and I mean, I would convey this as a how the officer we're going to proceed, to have it so that the administrative chair will send a notice to all members who are term expiring, asking if they would like to renew, yes or no, give them a timeline. At how much time the Minister of Chair will tell us all members wish to renew, we do post it publicly as well as community members concerned. We will then consult the OJA, the Office of the ACC, and post it publicly and then move forward. I mean, that's sort of the motion we can entertain if that's what you'd like to do.
I would like to do that.
Okay.
Great.
Okay, I think there's been a motion to do that. I will write that down really briefly, but is there any intent to voting? Hearing none, all in favor of and the administrative chair solicit renewing members to see if they can renew and have their names passed to us. Please raise your hand or placard. All would like to all who are opposed, and all would like to abstain. Chair abstains. I vote 7-0-1. The admin chair puts an email regarding renewal. And as I said before, we do, this is our intent to codify this for the years out because there's a certain point where we're wasting 20 minutes every meeting, every semester doing this.
Yeah. Where would that be codified?
We were contemplating putting the UA's bylaws because it is an important role of the UA and to ensure that it is publicly accessible to everyone is that it's a document that's not going to be lost or misplaced as years go by.
And right now the UA bylaws just say the UA confirms.
The code says the CJC reviews and nominates to the UA, in fact, nominates faculty, and then the UA confirms and you're on the boards. The code doesn't talk about renewal. We actually have what the code does, but the code doesn't prohibit. So we've been following the procedure. Our goal is to get the code changes through and then have our bylaws provide context for how do we go about doing our roles in the code. Are there any comments or questions about the UHRB staffing?
I have a question. So do people still have to take an affirmative action to renew? Like
yes.
Kind of top the goal,
yes, you would have to, you'd have to note, respond to, in this case, respond to an email that yes. And then they would still be reviewed by us, but they would have to do the form application. In our experience, that also will screen out people who don't tend to respond to emails because they won't tend to respond to our renewal email.
Yeah.
It's a good property. All right. So, anyways, anything else? Fantastic. Next up is, oh, yes, the Green System, User System at Cornell. This is a brief update for the committee. We had the UA meeting last Tuesday, had the heads of the Greek Tri Council attend the meeting to talk about the state of their judicial system. It was a rigorous, robust discussion. I encourage anyone to look at the minutes or possibly recording if you're interested. What I'm bringing for this committee, though, there was a discussion about, in essence, multiple members of the Greek Tri-Council had discussed their concerns over it, at least an interest in looking at possibly being brought under the code. That has a very large consequence, and that would take a lot of doing because there's a Board of Trustees resolution and a number of other actions that make the university recognized but not registered, which puts them outside the code, even though the members are still under it. However, there appeared to be some interest to doing that, not only among the council themselves, the members present, and other individuals who are present in the room. And I wanted to ensure this committee is aware of that, and we wanted a brief discussion about that topic that you are afforded that opportunity. I'm happy to answer any questions for Victoria.
So I think you just explained this, that being that having that status puts them outside of the code, but So that they're outside of the code for the purposes of being within like a Greek organization, but they're still students?
Yeah, so the student is an individual, Michelle, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
The individuals are still students of Cornell, they're still students
yes.
of code.
Okay.
So if students of XYZ fraternity were hazing, the individuals can be charged under the code for hazing.
Okay.
The organization is university recognized, and therefore they have a process. And that there are some concerns over the integrity of that process, how it operates.
Okay.
And therefore they said, well, and in discussions with them, in essence, low-level things such as internal affairs can still be handled. I mean, there's no reason, the code doesn't say you can't have your own, like a private organization can still have its own internal organ, or own system, like a chess club could have a disciplinary system if it wanted to. It just means that when things rise to the code violation, that organization is under the code as opposed to handled by someone else.
Thank you.
There was, in that discussion, there was, I sensed that they would like to come under the code because they're having difficulty policing some of their chapters or organizations. And so this will be part of that discussion process. So I'm very much in favor of bringing the code and for all kinds of reasons. But one of the things that was surprising in that discussion was that many, as they put it, there are good chapters and there are bad chapters. And the good chapters would like to come into the code because the bad chapters are giving them a bad reputation. And so that's what they would like. There's something in that that makes them much more amenable. This was the leadership of the Greek Council. So we would it makes it easier for us to contemplate doing that. I know that in many parts of the administration, I think, are in favor of this as well, or some combination of this. So it is something that I think politically is doable. And I think we should do it.
I mean, aside from, there's the, absolutely, in terms of, there's the political, or the aspect of there are board resolutions, and there are some barriers that are external that would prevent it, but assuming, in essence, to put them under the code would be simply a matter of reclassifying it from university recognized to university registered, and then all of a sudden, voila, you're not excluded from the code anymore. That being said, as it's easy to do, there are a bunch of checks to do and people consult prior to doing so. But certainly, we can look at and can ask the administration to contemplate.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. So that part's easy. Mm-hmm. The part that may not be so easy is how the Greek Council has policed themselves. And how they want to bring that into alignment. There are other issues associated with that. So it's not quite that easy. But I agree with you. The more simple we can make that happen, the better.
And obviously, there's also the resources. I mean, there's resources for the JED to see anywhere else. But in terms of the sheer act of reclassifying. Is a simple change that would have a lot of other implications that need to be examined first. Next, I have Dale, and I don't, is there anyone else wanting to speak? Okay, Dale.
I was going to say, I was present at the meeting, and one of the reasons that I didn't know anybody reflected that they wanted to be under the code is that the standard of evidence used under the campus code of conduct is higher than that used in the Greek judicial system. And so I think, from my understanding, that individual at that point wanted the Greek organizations to not necessarily be under the code, but have a higher standard of evidence, so it would be, in essence, more difficult for Greek students to be found guilty of any actions. I didn't get the feeling that they were all necessarily in favor of the entire Greek system being under the policing jurisdiction of the JA. There are benefits that I think they were all in favor of keeping that they have in the Greek judicial system.
Absolutely. I appreciate that.
That being said, I would like them under the code, it's depending on how it could work.
What I'm trying to mean, I think it would be better for the university as well in terms of having one system. But there are, in terms of part of the reason the code has a higher font to prove is the code, even though we try to make educational, does have a very large punitive aspect to it. And there was at least also brought up the idea that if we're more sure you did something wrong, frankly, even throw the book harder at them instead of going, oh, we're not really sure, that's another option. But I have Michelle to speak.
Yeah, I will. On my own thoughts on the standard side, but. If there is a move there, there's a couple of precedents that have to be overturned. One of which is the precedent that any member of an organization not, he calls us to Jay's office if there's an ongoing investigation with the organization, which means that as soon as a member gets initiated, I can't call them in as part of a Hayes investigation, which would completely derail the entire thing of that. So when we think about if this were to happen, the changes that need to occur, there would also need to be code amendments. And the office of the from JCCs and I have also talked about the fact that all witnesses are provided JCCs, which is just not a sustainable system. And so I do think that there would be some elements that would be within our jurisdiction, but there would be some precedent that would need to be overturned by legislation.
Thank you for that context. It would be an undertaking to do. That being said, I thought it was prudent to report to the committee. I don't know if it's on the speaker's list. We are at our time for this. I just wanted to make sure the committee was aware. I feel like it's interesting, it's exploring this. And we can, again, we have a lot on our plate, but I'm ready to start poking around the periphery and see where the general sentiment is, because again, this would require a lot of administrative change too. And if the administration is not in favor, it would be something to put on the list of wish list of things to do when we have time later. That being said, next on the agenda is the previously passed housekeeping amendments to the code. And we've been discussing it a few times. So an option that committee could choose to undertake would be to, in essence, things where we can agree with the president's, there were no conflict phrase, or agree with the president had, as the president's suggestions, we can formally motion that we agree with them or approve them, and then pull them off, and then handle the other ones as we go, and like we can to the UA will move all to that. That means that the committee, of course, body will do it in easy print, and I will hand the motions as made. But really briefly, the first change, and I'm going to try and be very brief, is suspension length for and suspension limitations for organizations. It extends it from 1 to 3 years for organizations and allows organizations to be suspended for up to 5 years. This actually was supported by the Greek Tri-Councils, potentially as an option for them to start looking at the one amendment code. The president noted no concerns with this change, this is supported by the OJA. Are there any comments or questions? Hearing none, is there any opposition to marking this one as still approved and resolved to move forward with it?
Motion to mark it as already approved and resolved and move forward.
There's a motion to close this. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Being this is a formal action, I'm going to ask for a vote. All in favor of resolving this resolve, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed? All abstained? Which are abstained? Their vote is 7-0-1. This portion is done, thankfully. Next, we have the broad language addressing immediate suspension for noncompliance. Our amendment changed the one word shall to may. And as a footnote, the president has requested a different language instead of saying may suspend the offender or issue a lesser penalty. And then to clarify, my reading of this, it's actually an improvement on our language. I don't personally have any issues with it. In our previous discussions, no one really raised them. That being said, are there any concerns with, in essence, accepting the president's proposed language and moving forward with that instead of the original?
I move to include the president's language and mark the amendment as resolved.
Okay. There's a motion to do so. There's a second. Any dissent to voting on that? Therefore, all in favor of accepting the president's language and marking as resolved, please raise your hand and placard. Absolutely.
I withdraw my motion.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, so the president's language on the left is in red. Our language is the highlighted language, the yellow in the middle. So we cross out shall and turn to may and added a footnote. And actually, I think footnotes for our internal discussion. And the essence of our language is the judicial administrator may suspend the offender or issue a lesser penalty. In the event the JA lets suspend, the JA shall.
I thought that the change on the left wanted to change to shall today, but I registered.
We are changing the shall.
So the middle section is what we previously passed,
yes.
And the left section is the president's response to our middle section.
Correct. And the right side of the comment.
But the president says shall notify.
Yeah, so can I maybe clarify administratively
yeah.
What that means? So if a student is suspended, I have to notify the registrar along with a couple other people that have this huge list from that side of the service. So the shall that the president kept in, that if we changed the may suspend someone for not complying with their sanctions, I shall notify the registrar to make sure that part of the procedure is like followed. So she didn't change that part of the, like that part of it had always been in. That wouldn't change because if we do impose a suspension, we have to notify them. So that part wouldn't change. It was just that whether it has to be automatic. So if somebody that doesn't complete their basis appointment. Right now, the vote is saying that I have to be at that. So I'll let our recommendation.
Yes. Yeah. To clarify, I mean, it doesn't, if the JA doesn't have to spend, if the JA chooses to spend, then the JA must notify their own offices because that's the SEC needs to know that X is the original limit to spend. Yeah. Okay. Are there any comments or questions? Is there
I resubmit my motion.
Okay. Is there a second to resubmit? Your second is sent. Hearing none, all in favor of accepting the president's language and marking this resolve, please raise your hands or placards. All who are opposed, all that abstain, zero abstains. A vote of 7-0-1. That language is accepted and we are moving forward. Oh, and I also should clarify that also it adds a new penalty or sanction to the code regarding refusal to comply with a valid penalty or valid remedy. The president has no comments on that, but that was included in that, I thought it was said. That brings us next to the role of non-matriculated minors. Based on discussions we had last meeting, I did some further research to provide great context. The president took the language we had proposed and mirrored it down to point B. It turned out actually the original proposal also mirrored it down to point B. However, we discussed consolidating that in the effort of comedy of language. The president, however, had noted that she was concerned with having, essence, what I would refer to as savings dash, essence that if you're not subject to some other policy, you revert to the code. I went back and reviewed the original language that was submitted to the committee by the Office of Risk Management, as well as my notes from that meeting. The original language that arrived to us had that, and the Office of Risk Management couched it as a safety measure, saying, well, they don't ever believe, and actually, to quote Mr. Elliott Dunn, who was kind of at the meeting, he said, no program can be approved without having some form of written language. But it was a safety measure and almost an olive branch saying, in essence, we don't want people left in limbo. And that was provided to us. The president had expressed concern about it, which, again, the administrative office of proposals had actually given that to us as part of their, we're going to do this, but again, there's a freak accident, we don't want someone stuck in some form of limbo. That's what was provided to us. And I also provided, as requested, 4 sample policy documents by the Office of Risk Management. I believe 2 are in your packet, and 2 of them are much longer, and I have copies here so I can look at them. They are the summer college program and the OG's code of conduct. In general, and these 2 are much longer, the more intricate your relationship with diversity, the longer the policies come, which would stand to reason. And these are all individuals who would no longer be under the code and instead would be subject to their own policies, which is practically been happening for a number of years, would align the code with their actual practice and potentially save us some legal liabilities.
I move to table the discussion on the non-matriculated minor section to finish all of the resolvings.
Okay. So move to table until we move to the end. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Hearing none, we'll move on with this. Next, we'll go back on to proposed language removal of a debt and suspension. There also, actually, if anyone wants to see the 2 longer policies that are up here, we just print them because they are 150 pages each, but I didn't have to circulate them around. The proposed language regarding the removal of a debt and suspension, the president has no concerns whatsoever.
You're just being silly.
Not at all. So, there are no concerns about the removal of debt and suspension. If the title speaks for itself, are there any comments, questions, or concerns or motions regarding this amendment?
I'm going to mark the amended language as resolved.
There's a motion. Is there a second? There's a second. Any dissent to voting? Hearing none, we'll move to voting. All in favor, please raise your hand for a placard. All who are opposed, and all who like to abstain, zero abstain. I vote 7-0-1. That language is marked as resolved. Yes. Next is the proposed language clarifying USA appointment procedures. We discussed this at our last meeting. There's an option on the right that would ameliorate the concerns that raised by the president. In essence, part A, we had an amendment saying that students may issue 1-year terms if they're going to be seniors or otherwise leaving. The president had no concerns with that. The concern raised was regarding the dean of the faculty in terms of their role for faculty members being reappointed to the boards. And the language on the right is, in essence, allowed to say that the faculty members would consult with the dean of the faculty prior to reconfirmation by the UA. I will be submitting this to Charlie Van Mullen, the fact to ensure he has no concerns, but in essence, it mirrors the current process within the fact that you would nominate and the UA then has to look at it. In this case, because we're the body that handles the boards, the information about senior who come to us and simply tell the DFAC that the seniors wish to renew, again, just as we consult the JA and JCC, do you have concerns, assuming none, we would then put it back to the way for another renewal. So are there any comments or questions or motions to resolve or accept, resolve, or table this language?
Move to table the language until we're done checking off the office.
Okay, so this will be tabled to the end, I presume, after the implement of the language regarding non-regulated minors?
Yes.
Okay, this motion tables until the very end. Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second.
There's a second. Is there any second table? There is none. The language is tabled. Next, the JA reappointment process. This language is being resolved on ongoing discussions pursuant to UA Resolution 11, which I provided an update. I provided an update on this committee. In essence, Michelle Stern has been extended for one, or the UA has concurred extending Michelle Stern for 1 year to allow this to be discussed at a larger venue. I know the resolution is in place with the UA Executive Committee and myself will, examine how to negotiate that. Any language for the UA bylaws will, of course, come to this committee as a separate, under separate cover. But in this case, I think we actually just table this, or table will withdraw this. Actually, table it, probably, because it's still kind of consideration. Table this portion indefinitely. We're going to be bringing it back later. So is there a motion or other actions that the committee would just take?
You want a motion to table?
Is a motion to table indefinitely. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Any dissent? Hearing none, this provision is tabled indefinitely. It will be resurrected whenever we have a new executive order to determine how we're going to proceed. I also intend to keep the committee informed of the negotiations to ensure that the committee is kept in the loop and able to express its will because we do have to approve whatever comes out of that. Next is the language concerning no contact directives. The idea of making it mutually binding, the president had concerns about, and I believe the committee had no concerns as well. Then there was a provision that allows the JA imposed to suspending immediately if no contact is violated, also provides discretion in terms of allowing the JA to impose other interim remedies if he or she shall feel appropriate. The president also had no concerns. Option C was his response to the Minicus report is issued on June 11, 2015. I went back through it, I can sort of request it. There was an extensive concern about the use of interim measures in general, and a concern that some of them, being this, are not appealable, otherwise reviewable. President's concern was the question of the wisdom of having a create a new right of appeal. And I mentioned to the committee that we can achieve the same outcome by having them expire after a short set frame or set time, and then have a new renewal. Obviously, that is another option. It also would outline some effect. And further, historically, the committee in some areas has occasionally proposed two options. And said to the president, we support options A and B. We see them as doing functionally the same. We would be okay with either. In essence, offering the president as a general sign of goodwill, which one do you believe is best as an option that was done in a number of areas? And that might be an option here to address a similar concern without adding a right of appeal. There's a new language in the comment on the right in yellow that instead of having an appeal process, makes no contact directives, gives them a limit of 21 days, and it allows the hearing board to renew them for up to 21 additional days. This is a very rough language that could be brought to me as a suggestion. You're free to do as we see fit, but it does feel like there's other options to achieve that goal if the committee should consider it. Michelle.
So, as I mentioned before, there's actually three interim measures that the JA can take. Relocation, temporary suspension, no contact directive. I think the stab is the new language is a good one, but I would suggest change it to the petition, maybe petition university hearing board chair.
Okay.
Because getting a board assembled.
Just to review that.
Yeah, it's hard. And I think the check and the accountability on that would be nice under the chair. Because we request them for suspension or for suspension requests and things of that nature. If there is an appeal, a petition for two of the three categories, it makes sense to have all three. But as I mentioned before, I think the one that actually has the most educational impact on a student is the temporary suspension. The other ones have very little to do. And I think remembering that 6.4 is not under the code. Since I've been here, I've issued zero no contact directives, and I've requested temporary suspension twice, one for an orientation. And so, And I know the threat is this, you know, scary Jay who comes in 15 years and now, you know, just wielding unlimited power. But when you actually think about what you're asking the complainant and the respondent to go through, you almost ask them to go through the merits, even though it's just a petition on whether or not something should stay in place, because all of the facts that would be relevant for why one was imposed initially would come out in that hearing. So that's why I really encourage that if there's any kind of process that it be done to a chair and not.
And to clarify, I guess, the intent behind that language that Kendall's next use, this was almost looking at it, it's not even a petition. It says this duration can be given for up to 21 days, and then the JA would have to ask to renew. In essence, assuming the original, the appeal process says, in essence, after 21 days, you can have the right of appeal. In this case, it simply flips it and says it can't be longer than 21 days. And if you want to extend it beyond that, it goes to a hearing board or a board chair. I think a chair rep, I think, would be a reasonable, a potentially reasonable outcome for these amenable. But in essence, the same idea is the goal is we don't want these used for months and months on end. Assuming that the sanctions are in place, in essence, we're looking at 42 days, which is over a month between interim measures and a resolution that provides ample time to at least begin and allow things to move along. But again, the goals can be changed and tweaked as the committee sees fit.
I think the one thing that I just want to add at that point, the code talks about 21 days on when a time the student chooses not to have an SDA and moving forward towards the hearing. And so you're not even putting any investigation time. And there's also times when individuals are saying, I have a court case right now and I would like to postpone this.
Okay.
And so what you're saying is like all these renewals would still have to keep occurring.
Okay.
And so just kind of keep that to consideration.
Appreciate that. The dates and everything in there is perfectly amenable.
I echo the last point she made regarding 21 days being not actually how long a case takes. I think assuming the no contact directive requires an individual to leave a space that the other individual there, like a 6.4 NCO would be, I think it does have a huge educational impact. Restricting someone's movements on campus is an exceptionally stressful experience with clients to go, for my clients to go through. So I would just disagree with that one point. I think it's still, even if it's mutual, because somebody has to leave the room, so it's
both
still
people have to go through. They're neutral, so like they're in the same space, both.
Yeah, so every, like, there's still having their education impacted by restricting their movements, regardless of whether it's mutually binding. So that's just my one point of information.
Are there any other comments or questions? This is the language, the new language is a proposal to address concerns that were raised about having a new right of appeal. We can tweak it to add further that if other measures are up for appeal, that this would be included. We can change the delay. In essence, the concern was that interim measures were being used, the mix for is very pages of it were being used in manners, even if they're not, there's interim, there's no hearing on the merits, they're being used for too long, and to have some form of check on that to prevent issues that had occurred in the past. And how we should do that, I think, is open to discussion. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question about no contact?
Yeah.
If they're all mutually binding, like, and two students have one and they both have to leave the room, like, are they no longer allowed to take any classes together?
So when you, do a no contact directive, and like I said, I haven't done any here, and so you tailor it. So you can create exceptions, and so you say, okay, there's no contact directive for them to interact with the exception of this class. Student A must walk through the door by 8:50. Student B must sit in the back of the class by 9 o'clock, and they can't interact. So you actually, in those situations, you have to very specifically tailor it, and we work with professors to say, okay, we can't have them in the same groups together. They have work set rules, gym studies.
Kimball, did you have an amendment you wanted to make?
No, just a comment.
Oh, okay.
Are there any other comments or questions? I don't have your own speakers list concerning this.
Are we close on this?
Pardon?
I mean, it sounds to me like we can approve this. We have the changes.
Approve the language that had the new draft language.
Yeah. Change it so it says Michelle's, you know, the chair. And,
the chair.
And do we want to change the time?
So we could do, I mean, I personally say, oh, should Michelle, I mean, it means that it's still impactful, but it is not a temporary suspension in terms of, I think that's an option. I think the committee, I mean, we should discuss that, certainly with that. In terms of timelines, I mean, I guess with Kendall and Michelle, in terms of ensuring that these aren't used at a different item, what is the timeline I think would be appropriate for the JA to impose, and then almost the hearing board, the hearing, I mean, 21 days for both, we could tweak it to 30 days and 90 days, 30 days and 60 days, we could change how we see fit. So I guess ideas that the committee could consider for timelines that would still accomplish the goal of ensuring these aren't used indefinitely, but also responsive to the fact that we don't want to be somebody hearing board chairs and being overly burdened into the system.
Suggestion? So we could make the first space, the first time, say 40 days or something, and then all subsequent might be 21 days. Would that cover it, Kendall? Because you're talking about investigate time necessary for an investigation. So that initial one would be 40 or some number. And now all subsequent ones would be upon appeal be 21.
Wait, you said 40 for the first one? Is that what you said?
Yeah, 40. Or, I mean, I'm not wedded to 40. But whatever the space that seems reasonable that doesn't clutter up the process or the investigation.
Investigation, Michelle, on average. I know I've had some pretty lengthy ones in my plan. I've been with them for a longer time, so I'm not sure. And that wasn't speedy experiences, and I don't see all clients, so I don't know.
So I think it's challenging, right? Because when we're looking at a case where you would have a known contact directive, you're looking at a pretty serious allegation. So usually, just I'm thinking of some of the timelines. So if we have somebody coming to our office who wants to file an incident report, and there's something that would need an interim action that happens within 1 or 2 days, I mean. It's hard, but yeah, I mean, it depends on whether students will decide an SDA, if we're over break, right? So the idea of having, when does this come over break is it sometimes happens. Then are we talking about just for no contact directives?
We could also, if we so desire, change the language to 21 academic days or class days, in essence, to ensure the clock. In essence, the clock's not going to run over, right, if we so desire. We have some options if we want to tweak to determine, to ensure that the breaks aren't running clocks. Otherwise,
well, technically, students who are on study abroad are changing their session. Technically, okay. That day. So, I mean, I appreciate that. But, 60 days as a starting point might be a start. The idea of 42, just doubling. First one isn't a bad one.
So 60 days and then 21 days.
You're proposing we accept the hearing board chair and all the language would reflect that. And then that in essence it would be the duration up to 60 days.
After initial period of 60
yes.
days.
So 60 days and the hearing board chair can renew for 21 days.
That's right.
Further on. Okay. There's a motion to amend the language to reflect that. You also including the changing to hearing board chair.
And changing the chair.
Okay. So there's a motion to change the language that read roughly. Such directives may be issued for duration of up to 60 calendar days. Should the judicial administrator believe a no contact directive remains necessary after that time, he or she may petition a university hearing board chair to extend the directive for up to an additional 21 calendar days. If the chair determines that the no contact directive is no longer necessary, he or she shall not extend the directive. Should the chair choose to extend the directive, he or she may modify the directive's term, but may not supersede an active court order. That is roughly what it would read.
May I ask for a friendly amendment? I think just saying that if there's some language that just in case you have to do it for another 21 days, I don't know what kind of language or word to put in, but just not saying that for each additional 21 days or something.
Well, in that case, what we could do is you change it to extend to renew. So instead of extending, you're renewing it,
yeah.
Which implies that renewing it can be done multiple times.
There we go. I have a question, Michelle. How is the hearing chair selected? Is that like a rotation? Or is it just whichever one? You said it's all of them and whoever responds first? Or
In the same way that the administrative chair has to do a random order at the start of the year, they randomly choose the order of the chairs. So anytime that we need a chair for any action with the code, we go to the rotation, but the chair needs to recuse itself, so we go to the next one.
So is that the administrative chair that is doing that, or you're directly like going through the list? When you do you email the administrative chair?
No, and then for the chairs at the start of the year, they say, you know, Rocco pulled one, Claire's two, Tim's three, Tom's four. So mm-hmm. that if I'm requesting an interim suspension for or a case where I'm looking at suspension, I go to Rocco first. Mm-hmm. The first one in order. And then that chair stays with the case unless they mm-hmm. recuse themselves. And then so if there's something that comes up that I would have to renew that, then the next person would be. So it's just the order of that. A long explanation, I'm sure.
So there was Richard made the motion. I have given this review. Was there a second to that motion? Amend.
Second.
Second.
I move to amend the language of the amendment just to change in the first line to for a duration to for an initial duration.
Okay. So to make sure I have it clear, such directives may be issued for an initial duration.
Or I don't know. Would it be better to say such directives
or initial
may initially
period.
Be
maybe initial. So directives may be initially. Issue.
Even though we're splitting the.
Well, I mean, it's better to get it right. I'd rather not create a loophole in the initial relations. Or accidentally shame the JA and they'll scammer money. So, in essence, an emotion amendment that I have gave and I have reasons for your list.
Yeah, so I think if no contact directives are used only in like really extreme cases, then my opinion is that like the hearing boards in whole should be looking at them. I mean, I'm a little concerned about just having hearing board chairs look at them and also having it be like a whole 2 month period where the only person who would have reviewed it is just like one hearing board chair. I think if you're going to like substantially influence someone's life by like issuing a no contact directive, and especially influence like the person who had the thing done to them because they're all mutually binding, then in my opinion, there should be a board that reviews it and they should be reviewing it for like, I'm on a more regular basis to like check in. I think that if it's like a pretty reasonable thing, which I like expect you to give like reasonable no contact directives, then they'll just approve it pretty quickly. I guess I don't know how we could make it less bureaucratic so that, you know, we can have the ease of only having a hearing board chair do it. But I do think that there should be more than just the hearing board chair doing it, because if I understand, we don't even appoint the hearing board chairs, right? Like those are appointed by the president. So the only people that we appoint are the hearing board members. And I would definitely want them reviewing all the no contact directives, or at least I would be able to sleep more soundly at night, knowing that, you know, if I were to run into judicial trouble, that my no contact directives would be reviewed by my peers.
I have recent access.
I had similar concerns in 60 days. If you're thinking about a semester, you know, this was a long time. And, you know, just looking at the language is built in terms of the kinds of cases that call for. You know, that justify having no contact directives, right? So it's harassment, abuse, assault, rape, romance, activity. So I mean, those are severe, I guess, but something like harassment can be quite broad in terms of the kinds of conduct that can be in. It just seems like a long time. I don't know why you do that for 6 days. I'm still not really clear on that. And I think that Dave's point about the chair alone is warranted. I think it's a real concern.
Absolutely. So there are options. So we can obviously tweak that down. We could lower it. We could, the options that I mean, that occur to me, we could lower the initial duration, increase the length of the renewal, or you could even do a trifurcated system where the JA can do it for X period of days. The hearing board chair can extend it. This is maybe overly complex. The hearing board chair could extend it for X period of days, and then after the time it's still necessary, a board would look at it. Again, I don't want, there's a certain point where we don't want to be sure, but that being said, the full option for a full plan option to raise open to the committee. I have Michelle on speaker's list.
If it is a board, I would just ask that it be a paper proceeding.
Okay, for sure. So that being said, we're currently entertaining a motion to directives maybe as it's initially issued for a period of days. Original length was 621. Richard has a motion to change it to 60. There was a motion also along with that to change for the hearing board chairs to look at it. There have been discussion about that. That motion is still on the table. There are other options. Michelle definitely could make it sort of a paper review. That being said, we are still in discussion on that motion to amend. We can either amend it further, draw the amendment, or vote on the amendment up or down. But that remains the prerogative of the committee.
Richard. I have a question, Michelle. How often do the hearing boards meet?
So they don't meet consistently. So we've asked that anyone who's interested in serving as a hearing board reserve this room actually on Tuesdays and Fridays to then not have to deal with some logistical nightmares with that. But because we randomly select the members, so let's say in the same way that we randomize the chairs, the administrative chair goes through and they randomly number people. So if we have to contact 30 students before we get to the ones who can do it, it's a lot of administrative work. I mean, it's our job, so it's not that big of a deal, but I mean.
My question was not directed at opposition to the paper. The paper proceeding, but to the time notion. I mean, it's, so you'll be okay with 60 days paper proceeding, and you're okay?
No, I think it should be shorter, and it should be a whole board.
How short?
So I mean, it's
like 21 right. days.
For the first one?
Yeah.
So answering.
So what? We should vote. I mean, we should discuss and vote on that. Yeah.
And that's it. So it seems like Gabe and Raisin want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. In essence, this proposal for to change the law of paper education. I mean, if we go to paper education for 21 days, the U.S. is going to have the once the board looks at it, they can also extend it. I mean, again, there's a lot of levers to be pulled, and one of the things where we can go in different directions as well. I the research game want to add anything before I move on. Here you know, Michelle.
Give me a second. Yes. So just to make sure I understand how this works, and I understand it hasn't worked very at all, right? In terms of you haven't had to do it, but that the judicial administrator initially can do the no contact direct. And then what we're talking about is how long can that be for? And you're proposing 60 days, and that it could be up to 60 days. And then if it's going to be extended again, somebody needs to review it. And should it just be the chair, or should it be a full hearing board? And should it be paper or not? Paper, I think, is out. Paper is no good for something that's serious. People don't confer when they're looking at paper and not each other. And I have, that, of course, tells you what I think about having just the chair do it, since the chair is talking to the chair itself. So I think it should be a board that actually has said, this is serious stuff. And I think due process calls for something that is more fair than just the paper extension after the judicial administrator has the unilateral power to do it. And I think 60 days is just too long. I think it's too long.
And what would you be happy with, Lisa?
Well, either the 21 days, maybe 30.
28.
28, yeah.
Michelle,
so just some of the things that we should remember when we are scheduling here, right? So the code prescribes a set number of days in which we have to notify people in advance. So let's say that we have this only available for 21 days. I need to be starting to schedule a hearing almost after 10 days after the issuance of a no-contact directive or as proposed. And what makes me a little bit nervous about having some of these set dates is that let's say it's even 21 days, right? So I'm starting to do a hearing. Okay, so thank you, parties, for coming in, doing the no-contact directive in place. 10 days from now, you need to let me know if you want to do a hearing to petition this. But I need to schedule in enough time that allows the board to make a decision, because if they don't have their written decision to me by the time that their no contact directive expires, that interim measure is no longer valid and the safety of the both parties can't be there. So when we're talking about these timelines, I also remember like the administrative stuff that the code prescribes. And so that's what makes me a little bit nervous about some of these shorter timelines, is that we might not have any a lot of investigation done. You know, and so I do think we have to be very careful, because now if I'm having to build in time for the chair to write their decision, circulate it, allow any dissents to be made, that's almost another 7 days that is being tacked off that. So if I'm looking at 21 days minus seven, that's 14. And if I have to know if I could go with an eight, like I'm assembling a board 7 days after
so,
I do it.
So would 35 work?
Richard, I actually, I the speaker's left. I put you on. I have Gabe and Risa. I also want to note that we actually set our time for a meeting. I'm happy to stay late, but I know we have the fairness that we are in our prescribed time. Is there a motion to extend? I have a motion to extend the meeting.
Motion to extend for 10 minutes.
There's a motion to extend for 10 minutes. Is there any dissent? Is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? Hearing none, meeting is extended to 5:55. I have Gabe and Risa, then Richard.
So could we do something where, like, we do 35 days? And then 7 days before the expiration of that, a hearing board, like if seven days before that 35 days expires, if you want to like renew the no contact directive, then you can just say like, please review this within 7 days of it expiring, so that there is no overlap period. There's no period where the no contact directive is not in place. I mean,
it's not a matter of them reviewing, it's a matter of them issuing their decision, circulating it, and then sending it to the parties. And so that's, so I think what we need to be really careful of setting some set timelines is we had a snow day right on Friday. So we had a hearing that had to get postponed, that this is a hearing to hear a no contact directive. I now have students or community members who may not have the safety protections that they're afforded to. And so, you know, I keep asking for a lot of trust under this process, and I understand why there needs to be procedural checks, but I think there are procedural checks and how few instances that these can be issued. And so I think there are already some checks in there. And so when we keep spending all these times looking at how do we shorten this process and have all these deadlines, I don't mind a shortened process if the code didn't already prescribe times when I'm required to arrange and provide notice to hearings. And so I think some of it is that because we have such a prescribed code of conduct, that when we want to have areas of flexibility, we can't. And so if we had no kind of ramifications of when parties would be notified, you know, fundamental fairness, we'd be able to say a lot more easily, okay, a board, 21 days, comprised of maybe one faculty, one staff, and students, and same with the appeal board, that would make some of these things easy. And so I think where I'm wanting this to kind of really talk about is how are we using these appeal process to protect the people who need to have these interim measures? And I don't think that's been a lot of thought or part of our conversation.
Yeah, I actually like the approach in the comment column as the alternative.
That was a draft that I had.
Right, done. I have been focusing on that more, and I have a sense that that's what you're looking at. Gabe.
Yeah, yeah, that's what
gives we're the JA the initial power to do something up to X amount of days. I think 60 is too long. Something shorter than that, whether it's 28, it's a good number for that. And then it puts on the judicial administrator the burden to say that if you want to extend it, then this is what you have to do, is to put it before the board. And that takes out the appeal issue. I think it's cleaner. Maybe there's something I just don't understand about the other process that still may create the burden that you're describing, Michelle, but it seems to me to be better than the appeal because it's just more straightforward. Like, this is the period of time you get up to this time, and if you want to extend it, then it's up to you to take this action.
So, and Richard, actually, I don't want to ask anything really. I had his speakers after Richard, they prefer. Just to add some behavior context, originally we looked at this, so the approach we considered originally looking at this, there were concerns that since the renewal process would be onerous, therefore we said, oh, like an appeals process, so the party has to voluntarily accept forward to appeal. The president and mother have raised concerns over creating a whole appeal process, and therefore I propose we can go back to the original idea, and that's what we're discussing. I have Rich and Michelle.
Well, my question is about number of days. That's the real thing. So there's 28, I'm hearing Michelle correctly, 28 still is a little bit on the short side. 60, I've come to believe, you said Gabe would convince me, the 60 is too long. So I would propose 35.
I can get on board with 35.
So, Risa?
If I suppose so.
I move to amend Richard's 35. Amendment from 60 to 35.
Michelle, is that okay?
Actually, I'm Michelle, let's speak to so Michelle, you have the floor to talk fully on that.
Okay.
Or in this whole process, I'm sure. Yeah.
I thought a really nice compromise was the duration of, I can get on board if it's 35 days. But I would wanted to petition University here in Boulder Chair so that we're not doing a whole board. Because the issue, it's the time, if it's a shorter time, it makes more sense to do with a chair. In order to have a full board, I need a longer mayor amount of time. You know, 60 is what I would need probably for a minimum if we're doing a board. I'm happy to go down to, you know, every 7 days if I can renew it in front of a chair. And so, I mean, I can go further down in that way. It's just the logistical procedures and following the code's time. So I can offer that as a compromise.
So I have Dale, I have Richard, and I have Kendall.
I just want to say from what I'm hearing, I feel like something that I've really been spoken about is that the no contact directives are also to protect the students. Like we're talking about it as if it's a burden on every student to ever have it extended past a certain point. And there might be times when if I'm understanding Michelle correctly, having the board convene could cause delays in that renewal of that no contact directive that would in a sense be hurting the students, not putting a burden on them by not allowing it to be renewed. So I think I'm going to agree that having just the chair renew it is enough of a check. Like I think we can trust the JA and trust the chairs to an extent that this won't be an abuse of power. And as you've discussed, it's not really a power that's being used at all. So I'm going to go against the part of the amendment, or I'm going to agree with Richard's current amendment to change it from board to chairs.
Thank you. And I would go back on the amendment. In this case, I think it's more or less we're just trying to figure out where we want to go. I have Richard, then I have Kendall. An option that occurred to me that you may also consider is if you're going down to a week or 2 weeks, you could also rotate hearing board chairs. We have a number of hearing board chairs, review board chairs. You could go, in essence, it starts rotating. So you're having at least some other form. I mean, it's still not a full panel, but if you're going from Rocco to Tim to Tom or to Claire, in essence, you're getting someone else looking at this after a certain period of time, which may provide a middle ground if we're looking for one. I have Richard, then I have Kendall.
Kendall, I'd like you to go first, then
I have Kendall.
So, if I'm recalling policy 6.4 correctly, the appeal of interim measures goes to one individual as well. So, kind of reflects another policy within our university, despite all its flaws. I don't think 6.4, that's not one of the ones I have a huge issue with. Additionally, certain interim measures are not going to last forever. And unlike 6.4, these interim measures can only be put in place when a charge is filed. So, it seems like these are interim measures that are being placed without the underlying facts that are going to be adjudicated shortly. So I think in the context of the code of conduct, interim measures are actually interim measures, whereas in policy 6.4, they're not interim because the code of conduct actually adjudicates the underlying issues.
So the issue about the full board versus the chair, they renew, so we have 35 days, then we have 21. At that point, we could convene a full board. And if that happens, then and the full board approves the continuation of the measure, then from then on, we could revert back to the chair. But it does seem that at some point, the full board should look at this. I agree with Gabe, but not every time for renewal. I mean, you want to What we really want is these things to be done by 56 days. But so that would be a suggestion. So that the full board, at the time of the expiration of the first renewal, then meets on the measure before it can be renewed again.
So like 35 days.
It'd be 35 days, renewed for 21, end of 21, the full board has to be.
So 56
days. 56 days. I'm trying to get to the length it takes to adjudicate these things. We're going to meet on the 21st or March 21st or something, and we're going to talk to the hearing boards and see what their problems are or what they do. But I think 56 days is reasonable to have a case adjudicated in a normal way. And it is balancing the rights of the who wants to be protected with who, in effect, is being inconvenienced by the accusation. So that's what I would propose.
Thank you. I, Michelle, we are again at time. As I said, I am happy to remain afterwards. If you want, we can extend, we can adjourn, I can stick around, we can continue talking, whatever way we'd like to move forward. And I am free this evening, so I'm happy to. I think this is an excellent discussion. We're making progress, but that means that we are at the expiration of our allotted time.
And move 15 minutes.
Okay. Motion to extend 15 minutes. Is there a second? Any sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
And a motion to adjourn. Okay, so we have made a consent. That means that we have to vote to extend first. So all who are in favor of extending 15 minutes, which will take us to 6:10, please raise your hand or a placard. All are opposed. All would like to abstain. So by a vote of 2-3, the motion fails. There's been a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? The motion actually worked at time. So in that case, the motion to adjourn is there a second. There's a second, it is sent to adjourning. There is, I hear none, therefore it is 5:37, the meeting is formally adjourned. I am free and happy to sit here and continue talking with what we'd like to continue discussing this, but I understand that